Welcome, friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm host of the program, also, more importantly, a father of five. We're raising our children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado, where we have lived for some 9 to 15, 16 years. And we believe it is a safe distance from the demise of Western civilization in a metaphoric sense, which means we're trying to separate somewhat, yes, in terms of raising our children apart from the ideologies and the worldviews that are corrupting society around us. Not to say we're not connected with what's going on out there. We do have internet out here, believe it or not. And we are in touch with what's going on in other places around the world and around the country. And today we want to comment on a few things happening in the news and take it from a biblical perspective. And, of course, if you have picked up a newspaper, if you've seen the internet over the last week or so, you're going to know about the rampage that occurred in Tucson, Arizona last Sunday. Some Sunday morning, roughly 10:15 a.m., a shooter, Jared Luffner, wound up killing a number of people, and his target was Representative Giffords, who, by the way, now is still in the hospital in critical condition. After brain surgery, the doctors are a little more optimistic, so we're hoping that her life will be saved as a result of this. But it is amazing, Dave, how many false cause, logical fallacies are being tossed around. I mean, the shooting happened at 10:15 a.m. What was that, like 11:15, where everybody started coming out, although lefties came out and said, well, it's got to have something to do with these conservative talk show hosts. Apparently the guy had a panoply of political opinions that seemed to fly around. He liked Karl Marx. He liked Mein Kampf, which, I mean, he liked National Socialism. He liked communism. And he seemed to be opposed to the mind control of a 1940, 1984-ish Orwellian type of government. So, you know, now, okay, they latched onto that and said, well, now, he's a follower, he's a faithful follower of Brother Rush Limbaugh. That's got to be the reason why he went after the Democratic congresswoman down in Tucson, Arizona. Dave, false cause analogies flying everywhere.
Well, I think you just pick what you're against and you assign it to it. For instance, it was global warming that caused Jared Lee Loeffner to attack the woman. He got a little hot.
It's hot down there.
It is. Yeah. It is. And because it's getting so hot down there, he lost his mind.
Global warming in Tucson, Arizona caused the shooting.
We can't say it's a sole cause, but I think we can say it's a contributor.
It's a contributor. Sure. I can see that. My wife and I were down there in the Phoenix area in September. It's hot. Really hot. So there's another theory. I'm going to talk false cause and logical fallacies. Maybe that was what it was. New story just came out. Drudge said the guy never even bothered listening to the news. He didn't watch TV. Apparently, he couldn't have spelled Rush Limbaugh's name. He's a bad speller, from what I understand.
Well, I don't know about his spelling habits, but, you know, the link to talk radio seems very dubious. I think the link to high gas prices is much stronger.
Maybe his dad listened to conservative radio. Or a neighbor. Maybe a neighbor. Maybe he saw a Palin sticker and that just pretty much, you know, he flipped his top.
I think you have a very good theory there, because Sarah Palin seems to make a lot of people flip their wig.
And I believe there's a fair number of Sarah Palin stickers running around Phoenix, Arizona. I was down there and I can vouch for that.
We even have a name for that.
Sarah Palin caused the whole rampage.
Sarah Palin derangement syndrome.
Yeah. You see a sticker, you see a bumper sticker of Sarah Palin, you just lose it. Okay, new theory here. We're working on false cause, logical fallacy. Yeah, I think we're up to about 178 of them. Remember that sheriff down there in that county? He had a few things to say.
Sheriff Dubnik.
Dubnik.
Yeah, Sheriff Dubnik made a nice incoherent speech about, well, if radio didn't cause this, you know, it will one day.
There's a lot of whole lot of hate out there. Whole lot of hate out there, conservative talk radio. People take positions against other things. Woo, these people are agreeable folk, and they're going to wind up, I think, inciting all kinds of hatred, and there will be rampages every county around America.
I hate all that hate talk. It doesn't make you so angry when you hear that hate talk.
Settle down, Dave.
Okay.
Settle down. Everything's going to be okay. Now, Dave, here's a theory. Here's a theory about, again, we're working on the cause. Why did Jared Luffner wipe out a few people down there in Phoenix or Tucson, Arizona last weekend? What could have caused this? Dave, just wild, wild concept here. Maybe a heart that was deceitful above all things and desperately wicked.
You think?
Yeah. That'd be a biblical anthropology there. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, a biblical anthropology slipping out on the Generations Radio broadcast. The guy was seriously messed up, Dave. I mean, does anybody disagree with that?
I don't think anybody's disagreeing. I don't think anybody's disagreeing with that.
The guy was seriously messed up. He had a little demon worship thing. He had a skull and dried up oranges and kind of a little altar thing in his backyard. That's just weird.
It is weird. I've seen weirder things. I've seen people with pictures of skulls on their skin with snakes coming out of the eyes. Yeah. You know. And, yeah. So, I mean, there's weird stuff out there.
A lot of weird people in the world. Okay? And folks, here's the deal. Here's the deal. I mean, from time to time, this weirdness explodes. Now, the fact that it doesn't explode shocks me. It is nothing but the goodness of God that restrains hundreds of thousands of people like Jared Lufner. Dave, the Wall Street Journal this morning had a number of his quotes over the last year of his Facebooking and all the rest. I mean, you talk about incoherent, you talk about hatred, you talk about anger, you talk about a guy who's seriously messed up. But, Dave, you know what's amazing? I mean, I'm reading this in the Wall Street Journal. These are things that I find on all sorts of streams and all sorts of Facebook entries from your almost practically your average person who engages on the internet. A lot of times they've got a lot of anger issues. They respond to a news story. There's an F word. There's F this, F you, F that. It's, you know, GDU, and I disagree with you. If I had my way, I'd come kill you. I mean, I see this sort of stuff all the time on the internet. There's a lot of anger and hatred simmering in these political discussions and in any sorts of conversations that go on out there. Friends, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people, Dave, I think right now on the very edge of doing exactly what Jared Lufner did. It's the mercy of God that restrains these people from doing this sort of stuff. And here's the other point, Dave, is that I think the government's going to take an opportunity here to jump on this. Remember, anarchy is another opportunity for tyranny. And every one of the tyrants out there, anybody who wants to ban guns, anybody who wants to control the internet conversations, anyone who wants to make sure the government is monitoring everything and has their little psychiatrists monitoring the brains of people making entries into the internet, they're just waiting. They are waiting with bated breath for the Jared Lufners of the world to do exactly what he did. And they'll jump on it. Friends, anarchy is a wonderful opportunity. I mean, they're like, praise the anarchy, praise the anarchy. We've got another reason. And hopefully the anarchy will create all sorts of fear in the nation so that we will do what we can to restrict gun rights and to restrict privacy in the internet. Dave, I think this is the golden moment. It's a lot of liberals. Let's face it, the average liberal thinks, It's our time. It's the moment has opened up. Oh, wonderful. Another big anarchical explosion where 18 people just got shot in school or in a mall somewhere. Oh, it's our opportunity. Tyranny loves the sufferings. Big government loves this stuff. Hey, the average Democrat appreciates this kind of thing.
Well, I think they do. I mean, what is the Democrats' slogan right now? Their creed is don't let a good crisis go to waste. They've been looking for an excuse to clamp down on opposition, either it be talk radio or whether it be those who are not their constituents who like to carry guns and practice the freedom that firearms present. They are looking for the opportunity to go ahead and squelch that. Now they get the opportunity. You know, they could have just as easily used this as an opportunity to pass whatever legislation they wanted because here's is a crisis. Crises need action. That's their modus operandi. Something happens, you need to act because not acting – well, not acting is just crazy.
Yeah. Well, anarchy leads to tyranny. Tyranny leads to more anarchy. They play off of each other until civilizations break down, friends. That's what we've been saying for the last 8 years of this program. But what we're saying is the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. That's a biblical anthropological discussion on what's happening in Tucson, Arizona last Sunday. And our solutions are very simple. No tyranny. Don't need the tyranny. I'd say a good solution would be to hang Jared Lufner on the testimony of two or three witnesses who, my understanding, were there when this happened, and I'd say go ahead and hang them on Saturday. Doubtful that's going to happen. It's a biblical solution. And people don't want that because then you'd probably not have opportunity to regulate guns and to regulate every single innocent person who has never done what Jared Lufner has done across this country. That's the goal of the left. A biblical solution would be to hang him on Saturday.
There's a playoff game on Saturday. Could it wait till Monday?
Yeah, we could do it after the game. Or do it during the halftime show.
Halftime.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment with more. Stay tuned.
Maybe you've heard of home education. For the last 25 years, families have been bringing education home as they integrated education back into the family. Now this is spawning a new movement, and it's called family-based economics. Could this movement salvage the family? Could it save an economy or produce a sustainable agriculture? You know, when the debt-based economic systems fail, when the family fails, when the non-sustainable agricultural systems fail, what are you going to do? It's time to get a vision for biblical family-based economics now. The wise man builds his systems on the rock. Now, the foolish men didn't, and now look at what's happening. We're taking the 2011 Family Economics Conference to North Carolina on March 11th and 12th, 2011. Invited speakers include Doug Phillips from Vision Forum, Eric Weir from Weir Capital Investments, Scott Brown, and yours truly, Kevin Swanson. We're talking about how you will prepare your children for the future without brick-and-mortar colleges. We're talking about mentorships, contractualization, networking into the changing economies, family dynamics to the integrated economy, family inheritance, bootstrapping entrepreneurism, sustainable family economic systems, and family health care options that avoid socialist medical systems. Folks, almost every developed nation today reports social and economic decline on the macro scale. But we believe that our families can thrive in the midst of it all. We can build gardens in the ashes. For more information, you need to check out conference2011.com now. That's conference2011.com. Back on the Generations Radio broadcast, Kevin Swanson here, taking a look at the world around us through the eyes of a biblical worldview today. And Jared Loughner, Dave, interesting character. As you read some of his blog entries, etc., you're going to find that this guy appreciated anarchy, appreciated tyranny, liked a little bit of both. And I see this throughout America. I see a lot of Americans like a little libertarianism, like a little anarchy, like a little bit of, you know, myself is God, the Ayn Randian, I, the ego, am God. And then they like the tyranny, like a little Marx, they like a little Hitler, like a little Ayn Rand, they like a little of all of it. Why? Because they don't want God to be God. They want themselves to be God on the one hand, and they like the state to be God on the other hand. They're a little uptight when their form of tyranny doesn't reign, so they get upset with the other tyrants. So it's just one form of tyranny attacking another form of tyranny, and often they themselves want to be God themselves. And so, Dave, I see this flip-flop back and forth, and of course, sometimes we try to analyze it. Why are they conservative at one point? Why are they liberal the other? Well, a lot of Americans are that way. That's pretty typical. That's the way Americans generally are, unless they understand the balance of the one and the many as set out by the laws of God, who, by the way, is the one and the many.
I think that, Kevin, what happens is that people want to be tyrants. And in order to be tyrants, they have to have the liberty or the anarchy to become tyrants. And they want to use the force of the government to impose that upon others. That's no big mystery there. Muslims do it.
That is, they try to get in control of it themselves. Number one, the first proposition is, I am God. Second proposition is, I need to take control of everybody through the state. Or I need to back a party that I happen to agree with, at least at the moment, and ideally I will be in charge of the whole thing and make everybody serve me. So, and if you can't accomplish that, then I guess you just go get a gun and start whacking people.
Well, I suppose you could. Now, nobody's perfectly consistent when it comes to this. You think about all the protests against conservative speakers on college campuses that are exercising, the protesters, that is, are exercising their right to free speech by censoring other people's right to free speech, but apparently their right to free speech is the higher right. So nobody's really consistent. Now, in Loughner's case, I think he's more consistent than people are giving him credit for. I just think some of the research hasn't been sprayed all over the internet yet. Some of it has been. It turns out that this Loughner guy was very un-American. He did a YouTube recording where he's dressed up in Muslim garb burning a U.S. flag. So we know there's
some hate. Doesn't sound conservative.
No,
that's not something Rush Limbaugh would do.
Not even Glenn Beck at his rallies or anything.
No, probably not.
It's also discovered that he claims to be a gay man. Now, somebody who starts violating the laws of God and sexuality might just violate the rest of the Ten Commandments. Yeah, maybe the Sixth Commandment is doable, too. So I think we have levels of inconsistency, but what's frightening is our levels of consistency when it comes to rebellion.
All right, folks, back into the news. This is the second page of the Wall Street Journal. I just went over the first page. Second page, apparently the Illinois House of Representatives is trying to take care of the recession out there. They just about doubled the state taxes. So
So that should fix it, Dave. Got unemployment problems, recession issues out in Illinois, so the best thing to do is double the taxes, yeah? Just increase the tax burden.
Think about the logic of this.
My father beat you with whips, I will beat you with scorpions. Approach to governance. Interesting approach.
Well, think about the logic of this. If Walmart, say, was having a bad year, they were in debt.
Yeah.
If they just doubled all their prices, just raised their prices,
yeah,
I think it'd take care of everything, don't you think?
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you?
Oh, wait a minute. People might actually shop at Target.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the people in Illinois, if you want to shop at a different state, yeah, I guess you're going to have to move.
Come to Colorado or Texas. The worst states in the country, my friends, California and Illinois. And by the way, Jerry Brown, I don't think decreasing taxes was on his agenda, as I recall. In fact, I believe they're going to do their best to increase taxes themselves. They're going for a temporary tax increase, which always turn into permanent tax increase. But that's what California is doing. So California, Illinois, some of the worst unemployment rates in the country, they're going to increase taxes. We'll see how that works. Also, by the way, these are the worst states for business in the country, Dave. The best are Texas. Colorado's up there. We're in the top 10 best states in the country, largely because of Amendment 1. You remember the Tabor Amendment from 15, 20 years ago. I mean, thankfully, there was one guy named Doug Bruce, who worked really hard in the early 1990s to limit the size of government by an amendment to the Constitution of Colorado. And that has stood us in good stead through a lot of liberal administrations, friends. Of course, they've cut some corners over time. They managed to get some amendments passed to short circuit all that. But thankfully, Colorado has turned out to be one of the most conservative states in the union right now. So, folks, if you're tired of being unemployed in Illinois or California, getting sick of whatever Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Republicans, and the Democrats are doing because they have no clue how to bring free market enterprise into a state, then you come out to Colorado, or better yet, Texas. It happens to be the best state in the union for that. So making a call for any refugees who want to take off and leave Chicago and come to a free state, you may want to move into Colorado or Texas in the years to come. Dave, I would not be surprised if we see some sort of secession from the union in the years to come. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Now, you know, when people in Texas or Colorado are sick of the federal government taxing us in order to pay for the indiscretions of Californians, I have a feeling you're going to see the economy, the pocketbook of the average American press, some of these states towards secession.
I would be surprised if we don't. I think what will probably happen, or at least a good idea, is that we can just go ahead and give California to Mexico and let them worry about the debt, because, I mean, the Mexicans are taking over the state anyway.
California anyway, so.
So, yeah, they get some ports. It'd be a good buy for them.
Sure.
It's ironic you mentioned Doug Bruce, because he is the one guy who fought very hard to keep the limit of our state government within some limits.
One guy. By the way, he lives with his mom.
He lives in Colorado Springs.
Lives with his mom in Colorado Springs. His attorney from, he's a district attorney from down in Southern California, moved here in the late 80s, early 90s.
I think it'd be safer to say his mother lives with him.
Yeah.
But Doug Bruce is universally hated by the government in the most conservative city in Colorado.
They tried to put him in jail once, didn't they?
They tried to put him in jail. When they have a bill that limits government, they say a Doug Bruce amendment in order to scare people, because Doug, we all know that Doug has got, well, he doesn't like government.
It's amazing what one guy can do. Dave, I've always been amazed with Doug Bruce. All right, folks, before we end the program, one more story, and I think this story comes from I don't know where. But here's the way it goes. Lawmakers will look back on 2011 as the year the U.S. started down into a financial Grand Canyon because the first baby boomers turned 65 this year, the front edge of a tidal wave of baby boomer retirements. Over the next 20 years, around 10,000 baby boomers will be retiring every day, says Andrew Biggs, an analyst at the American Enterprise Institute. That means more people collecting Social Security, more people collecting Medicare, more people collecting Medicaid as well. That also means the members of one of the most affluent generations will slow down in buying cars and homes and consumer products of all kinds as they pass their peak earning years and head into retirement. Dave, thankfully, we're in a strong economic position as we move into this era of baby boomers retiring.
That's right, because we have raised a generation of the top-notch, best in the history of the world, video game players.
Oh, good point. And, Dave, this is going to be tough. I can see how this is going to be tough. If you have the baby boomers playing golf,
and the 30-somethings are playing video games while the 65-plussers are playing golf. I'm trying to put this together. So who's running the economy?
Chinese and Mexicans.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm trying to put it together in my mind. Friends, bad news, I think, for the upcoming decades. I think what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to come to the Family Economics Conference, because we're going to talk about the future of this country and how to build strong families and strong economies, which may not mean materialistic economies. And we're going to draw a distinction between materialistic economies and strong family economies at that conference. But this will be vitally important if our families are going to survive economically or even socially in the years to come. Dave, 79 million boomers will be shifting from paying taxes into Social Security, Medicare, to collecting benefits from them. 79 million baby boomers. That just blows your mind.
It does blow your mind, and I think that is exactly why these quote-unquote death panels or the euthanasia programs must happen. They'll happen clandestinely at first, and we'll give them nice names, end-of-life care or...
Well, thankfully, we have a president that's committed to life, you know. Oh, wait. Oh, wait. Sorry about that. We elected the most pro-death, most committed man to euthanasia and things like born alive bills than we've ever seen in the history of the nation. So, yeah.
Well, you wouldn't want to punish your daughter with a baby.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. You know, when you look at the whole scheme, the way the debt has exploded in the last 4 years particularly, we are no longer in a position to pay our debt. It has reached such a critical mass. I don't believe we can pay it down. We can't inflate out of it. Maybe we can expand productivity and work it down a little bit. But right now, we're riding on one single fact, and that's keeping us out of bankruptcy as a nation, and that is that we're the world's reserve currency. But it won't stay that way for long.
The Chinese right now are talking about their yuan or whatever it is replacing the dollar. In fact, that was part of the discussion with one of our big shots who was over there visiting them over the last couple of days. Well, here's what Doug Holtz, a former director of the Congressional Budget Office, says. The federal government's going to be bleeding money as the baby boom retires. We know we can't pay all the Social Security and Medicare benefits that we promised. There isn't enough money in the world to do that, so we know we're going to have to make some cuts, he said. Politicians are afraid to make the choices to do that. The two programs need tens of trillions of dollars to pay all the benefits promised, and analysts say that when all the boomers are collecting benefits, the government would need one of every $3 earned by those still working just to support Social Security and Medicare. So, friends, I tell you what. Was this a couple of months ago? I burned my Social Security statement on air. Do you remember that, Dave?
I do.
I burned it on air for everybody to see. Because, friends, we're not going to get Social Security. It's just not going to happen. Now, you might wind up with your $8,547 per year, but it'll buy you a couple of candy bars. So, please, friends, you can't rely on Social Security. It's not going to happen. Here's a better idea. Why don't you raise a couple of Social Security programs in your family? Dave, I've always said I've got 5 Social Security programs. I actually have signed away Social Security as part of my benefits as a result of being a pastor. There's still a little bit of an exception that you can take, exemption you can take as a pastor, as it turns out. You can conscientiously object to participating in Social Security. So I've signed away Social Security about 6 or 7 years ago, and I have no expectation of receiving any Social Security. Why? Because, number one, I don't think it's going to be there. Number two, I want a family economy. I'm tired of being a socialist. And I want to build a family economy by means of inheritance, by means of my children understanding that they're responsible for taking care of their mother and father in their old age, by means of a reintegrated family economy in the modern age. Dave, I think every family has to take some kind of a step, not necessarily the same step I took. So again, I'm not trying to bind people's consciences on this, but they've got to take some steps to reestablish family economies, families taking care of families, because I'm here to tell you, friends, the government isn't going to be there to do that for you.
Well, the government might right now be working on a solution, Kevin, down in the Treasury Department.
Oh, they've got a solution,
they
Dave.
They could be working on a geriatric virus that will wipe out people over 70, and that would take care of them.
They've got a solution. Believe me, they've got a solution.
That's their solution.
50% of Belgium nurses are administering toxic drugs to patients without their knowledge or consent. Okay, 50% of Belgium nurses are doing that sort of thing. And you don't think that's going to happen here in the year 2025? After Barack Obama, after Social Security goes bust, after 75 million baby boomers have retired, after we've killed 150 million of our babies over the last, 30, 40, 50 years? Of course we're going to be dealing with this, Dave.
And, Kevin, that's the connection that needs to be made. When you kill off your young, you're killing off the potential there to support your elderly. But the very generation that you murdered, the survivors are going to murder the other generation. After all, murder begets murder. And this is what's going to happen. It must happen. Otherwise, I can't see society continuing in any form that it resembles today. And, of course, murdering the elderly isn't really a form that resembles today either. What would we call that? Oh, I know what we call it. Evil!
Thank you, Dave. The year 2011, friends, a very big year. It's the first year the baby boomers turn 65. Hello? The next 10, 15, 20 years are going to be interesting. 75 million baby boomers retiring. They killed somewhere between 60 and 150 million of their babies through the abortifacient birth control pill and the abortuaries across this country. And I have a feeling that the Piper is going to invoice us. It's just a gut feel. You may have to pay the Piper. After 50 to 60 years of that kind of pro-death approach to the next generation, friends, the people that would have worked, the people that would have provided for the baby boomers, dead. But thankfully, we've got a great reserve of money established in the Social Security reserve. No, there wasn't any. We spent all of that already. We spent our kids and grandkids and great-grandkids into debt. Well, thankfully, as Dave mentioned, we have the strong character of the next generation. We've built it up through the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. Oh, wait a minute. 41% of those kids are born without fathers, up from 6% in 1960. Character? I don't think so.
So we have Farmville?
Yeah, they're playing Farmville. That's what they're doing. They're playing Farmville. Friends, it's a disaster.
We also got Facebook.
It's a disaster. But it's time to build micro-communities. It's time to build islands of freedom. It's time to do what we're doing. It's time for families and church communities to do something different, to teach something different, to raise up a vision for the next generation, to talk about a new family economy, a new way of doing families, a new way of doing economies. Not really new ways, but old ways. Ways that we are reconstructing from past eras. And friends, that's exactly what the Family Economics Conference is going to be talking about coming up here in just about 3 months, on March 11th and 12th in Raleigh, North Carolina. I would encourage you right now to sign up for that conference. You need to at least check it out at conference2011.com. Again, that's conference2011.com if you want to bring in a new form of economy, a new form of family solidarity in the 21st century as we approach some of the most difficult years we may have ever faced in the history of this nation. Folks, again, conference2011.com for more information on our annual Family Economics Conference. Ladies and gentlemen, you can interact with this program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.